304 in the Fast Lane. Your time check brought to you by Clarkson Jewelers, an officially licensed Rolex jeweler. Brad Barnes, Chris Ronji, Randy Carricker. Great to have you with us in the Fast Lane on 101 ESPN. And the most memorable moment from the decade comes from a game in which the Cardinals won, but a series that they lost. BT, I would think that you would beg to differ there.
Well, I think I would go with the championship in general. But I will say that is one of the coolest moments I've ever had the opportunity to be a part of and be around, was that Pujols home run that you heard off the bat. That one's legendary. It's epic. When we had Albert return to St. Louis and we were doing all the buildup, wasn't that pretty much number one on everybody's list? Yeah. Was that home run in that moment against Brad Lidge, who had been untouchable. And, by the way, a little aside, ruined him for an entire season afterwards. So, pretty epic moment, but awesome. Roy Oswalt shoved the next game.
It really doesn't happen. There are a lot of people that say, oh, that was a breathtaking moment. That moment literally took my breath away. It was unbelievable.
Isn't that cool? Yeah. So, and we hit on this a lot on our show, but what else can do that? Like, what else, aside from, like, tragedy, what else can do elicit a response like that where it's just like,
Usually, in a moment like that, you see the opposing players try to be as stoic as they can possibly be. But when you have guys in the Astros dugout going, oh, my God.
Guys that have been around the game for a hot minute.
For a long time.
Andy Pettit.
It is such an incredible moment, and I thought for sure, after something like that happened, I thought for sure, okay, they're going to go on and they're going to win the next game, too.
We did, too.
Yeah, and go on and win the World Series. Because normally that's what happens when you lose in such a dramatic, heartbreaking way. A lot of times, if you have a game the following day or 2 days later, it is tough to overcome that. And they did somehow, but either way, that moment was incredible.
Well, that pitching performance in Game 6, by the way, by Roy Oswalt, it bought him an enormous tractor. The owner of the team bought him a tractor.
A huge farm tractor.
That's what I thought. Worked out well. That, by the way, after we lost that game, that is a meal that I'll never forget. Because it was my rookie season, 2005. I thought that's what baseball teams do. We just win. Like, we're going to go win the World Series. Same emotions that you're talking about after the Albert Pujols home run. We felt that way. It's like, well, we're going on a run. We're going to win the World Series. I remember that being the loneliest meal I've ever had, and knowing it's going to be the last time that I eat there, because it was the last season in the old bush, and everybody kind of just sitting there, quiet as can be. It was like eerie how quiet and miserable that was. Losing sucks so bad. That's why 06 was better.
Yeah, that's way better. But that moment, that particular moment, with the exception of David Freese in the following decade, you're going to have a very difficult time topping something like that.
And that decade, 2000 to 2009, the Cardinals had six seasons with 95 or more wins. Two of those were 100-plus, 04 and 05. And an amazing amount of talent. Some of the teams were derailed, 0-2, obviously, by the loss of Daryl Kyle, and they go to the NLCS and lose to the Giants. Obviously, that team in 2005, Houston was really, really good that year. Cardinals had the best team, I think, in 2004, but were the starting rotation was gassed. You didn't have Carpenter for the World Series, and that really hurt you. The 07 and 08 seasons. How much did the death of Josh Hancock affect that 07 team? You think that was something that really affected the performance of the team?
I think that anytime that you suffer a loss like that, it's going to weigh on a ball club for a while. And for me, at least personally, it did. I mean, I went through a period where I didn't really give a damn about baseball, and it was just kind of felt throughout. And you go through a lull. Now, I'm sure there were many other factors. You have your World Series hangover, if you will. And just, you know, look, we struggled as far as starting pitching went, too. Had a lot of injuries early on in the season. Hell, I had to start a lot of games, which didn't go well for us overall. But, that definitely took its toll.
And a lot of front office drama. Walt was fired after that 07 season because he couldn't get along with Jeff Luhnow, and there was a desire on the part of ownership to build a more collaborative front office. And that worked for the Cardinals, obviously. They won in 2009 by going out and getting Holiday. Mozeliak makes that trade and then puts together the 2011 team. After the after that 2010 season, they needed some changes, and they went out and got Lance Berkman, who looked like he was done. He had been traded to the Yankees and spent part of a season there, but he was the perfect antidote for what ailed the Cardinals because his personality was so gravitational. People really came to Berkman on the first day of spring training, and it changed the demeanor of the club.
Well, you know, going back to before that, when you mentioned Josh Hancock and how good the decade was overall for the Cardinals, there was a lot of adversity during it that most teams don't face. You've got that. You have what happened to Daryl Kyle happening. You have Jack Buck passing away, which he wasn't a member of the team, but he was part of the Cardinals fabric and still is. I mean, that's a lot of really rotten stuff to have happen. And then to be able to overcome a lot of that, I think it's got to be tough. You know, yeah. BT being a teammate of Hancock's and other players having to persevere through all of this other stuff. That's a really rough thing to do, and the Cardinals did it.
And as good as the team was, BT, you lose a guy that if Scott Rolen doesn't get hurt, he's a Hall of Famer. And he did get hurt. Yep. And it cost him an opportunity to be a Hall of Famer. All of a sudden, your MV3 turns into an MV2. And Jim Edmonds' performance waned after 06, and he was traded after 07. It was a really fun 5 years, those 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. But, man, once the injuries and the age started catching up, it got to him in a hurry.
Yeah, and I guess that happens to every ball club out there. You always talk about windows, and, you know, was the window closing? Now, certainly for the Cardinals, even after I was gone, the window didn't close for long because you end up winning the World Series in 2011, and a lot of amazing things happened. But the constant throughout, and we hit on a little bit mainly with the home run, but you had the best player in all the lands. You had the best player on earth in Albert Pujols. You had you always had a feeling, especially in, I'm assuming, 04, because that team was ridiculous. And, Randy, we've hit on this plenty, but arguably the best Cardinal team ever?
I think so.
I mean, they were amazing. 04, 05, 06, you knew that in any given moment that guy was going to get the big hit you needed. Didn't matter if you were down three. If two guys were on, that dude was going to get that hit, and you were going to be right back into the ball game. It's amazing what having that guy can do to a club.
Oh, I think it changes everything, because even if everybody else is not able to contribute, you know, going through a slump or whatever, you've got injuries, you always felt like that dude, at least that guy, when his spot in the order came up, he was going to give you something. And there are very few players like that in baseball. You could probably count them on one hand, maybe two. The amount of players that you just know, if everybody else is slumping, he's still going to show up every night, and he's still maybe going to do something special. That is hard. It is hard to get those players. They are once-in-a-generation type players.
When the Cardinals won the World Series in 2006, six of their eight regular starters, their starting eight, came from outside the organization, and pretty much the entire starting rotation came from outside the organization, aside from Anthony Reyes, and Izzy came from outside the organization too. Could a team experience the success that the Cardinals enjoyed that decade with that plan again? That's next in the Fast Lane on 101 ESPN. The Cardinals had a great plan in the 2000s, and it started early on when they got Pat Hengen from Toronto. They reacquired Andy Benes, and they got Daryl Kyle from Colorado after he had had some unsuccessful times there. Obviously, the centerpiece of the decade was Albert Pujols, who we've talked about a lot. They drafted in the 13th round and got very fortunate with getting the best player in the game. The other thing that they were able to do was take advantage of teams that didn't make as much money as they did. Scott Rolen turns down a $140 million deal in Philadelphia and comes here and signs for $90 million because he wanted to play in St. Louis. Jim Edmonds is a guy that is headed towards free agency, and the Angels feel like they have enough depth that they move Jim Edmonds to St. Louis. And they also got rid of David Eckstein. Remember, they didn't want to pay David Eckstein in arbitration, and they let him go, and the Cardinals pick up David Eckstein. There were a lot of moves that the Cardinals were able to make during the course of that decade because, A, they still had that hometown discount that McGuire had made popular. And B, they were able to take advantage of teams that either couldn't keep a guy because of financial limitations or a guy that just wanted to be in St. Louis. As we sit here now, approaching a new decade, is there any way any medium to small market team could pull that off again?
I don't think so. I think that the good old days are pretty much gone. You're not going to get the hometown discounts any longer. And with revenue sharing, look, if a you're not going to find that where a team, if they really want to keep a guy, teams can keep whoever they want. Like they have that financial flexibility. I still do believe that currently your bulk of your success and the bulk of your team needs to be built through drafting and developing. And certainly there are plenty of players that come with from outside the organization, but they don't all have to be your big, big trade, big splash. Maybe it's a guy that you get in a minor league trade and he's a prospect, then he ends up being something big. Like that's a huge way to be able to build it too. So it doesn't have to all be guys that you drafted, but it's still going to have to be, for the most part, guys that you develop, I believe.
Right, and so there's going to be a lot of, we talked about this yesterday, there's going to be a lot of good fortune involved in that. Obviously, scouting, being able to identify talent and try to project what they're going to be is the biggest part of amateur scouting, especially when you're looking at other teams, organizations, and players that maybe they're sour on or not all that high on. That's where the Cardinals are going to have to be really good again. However, it's difficult to do that because some teams and organizations in the past had been able to, you have scouts who are really good at the eye test. You know, they're really good at looking at a player and saying, yep, I think he's going to be really good. But now there's data. Now all these players are getting measured. And there aren't a whole lot of secrets when it comes to not just major league players, but the minor league players, too. So that field has been leveled out dramatically.
It's interesting to look at the team right now with the best record in the game, and that's the Dodgers, and how this group was built. Austin Barnes and Kike Hernandez both came in a trade in which, ironically, the Marlins were building up. They got Mel Rojas and D. Gordon in a trade, and Barnes and Enrique Hernandez wind up with the Dodgers. Max Muncy was waived by Oakland. Corey Seager, a developed guy. Justin Turner was non-tendered by the Mets. Jock Peterson was a draft choice. Alex Verdugo was a draft choice. Cody Bellinger was a draft choice. It's not a team, even when you look at Kershaw, that has went out and made those big splashes, those big splash moves, like a Paul Goldschmidt trade that the Cardinals have made. The trades, the moves that the Dodgers have made, at least from what I see, that have turned them into a successful organization now, are small moves that turn out to be big ones.
It's very, and honestly, when you look at an organization like that, you have to be very fortunate, but you also have to be very intelligent to make moves like that. You can't just be that fortuitous where a bunch of these moves end up working out. So they've got something working there.
Where you see something that nobody else can possibly see.
Hell.
Right.
I mean,
you have a lot of voices in the room and a lot of eyeballs on all these players.
The Turner one, I still believe, was pretty fortunate. Getting him to turn into the guy that he was. Because when you watch him with the Mets, you're just like, he's okay. He's just a guy. Then he grew a beard and he was a man.
Yeah.
Maybe that was part of the
that could be the issue.
Digging into it. It's like, he needs a beard.
Or we don't have enough beards here.
That could be it.
It's interesting. The Dodgers have Kershaw and Buehler as first rounders. Obviously, they brought Ryu in from South Korea. South Korea, right? They don't have baseball in North Korea. At least professional.
As far as I know, they do not.
And then Kenta Maeda and the guys like Urias and Stripling. But the only two first-rounders of the Dodgers that they have right now on their 25-man are Kershaw and Buehler. Their outfield was all drafted by the Dodgers, but Jock Peterson was a second. Verdugo was a fourth. Cody Bellinger was a fourth. I think Peterson was 11th. So it's not like they're using fourth-rounders, but we go back to talent evaluation, right? That they're able to get people outside the first round that turn out to be great players for them. And obviously, having the money to be able to go out and sign those international guys like Ryu and Maeda really does make a difference. And being able to waste money on Cubans that don't work out for you, they've done a lot of that too.
It happens. Yeah. I mean, that is part of it. There's no such thing as a sure thing, even if it's the first pick in the draft. Like, that's not a sure thing. We've seen that year in and year out. But as an organization, you got to hit more than you miss. And the Dodgers have been able to do that. Now, they haven't been able to climb that ultimate hurdle in a long time. Found themselves in the World Series. Always a bridesmaid, never a bride, I guess, for them. And hopefully, same can be said again this year without making it to the World Series. But they've done a fantastic job of building over there. And while they don't do things, their approach is far from old school. They don't use the same lineups ever. They utilize the IL like it's going out of style. Mm-hmm. They're the main reason, I believe, that it's getting shipped back to 15 games starting next year. But they've been able to work the system. They've got good players. Their guys step up, and they put them in a good position to succeed, and you've seen continued success from them.
And the other end of this is the willingness and ability to take on risk. And Randy mentioned it, you know, paying players that don't necessarily work out. What the Dodgers and Red Sox have been doing is, I mean, yeah, they draft well, they've developed really well. A lot of these players they're utilizing are homegrown, but then they've also gone out and supplemented those guys with players that sometimes work out, sometimes they don't. And what they don't say is, well, we spent a lot of money on this guy, can't do that again. They'll do it again. You know, they will spend and they will commit money to other free agents if they have to. And I think nowadays it's probably the only way that you can sustain a full decade of going to the playoffs more often than not.
And that's why the Cardinals need to spend smarter, because they can't afford to make those mistakes. The Yankees make almost $600 million in revenue, and the Cardinals make, I believe it's like $190 million maybe. So the revenue streams are completely different. But the Cardinals can't keep messing up with going out and spending the money that they spent on Brett Cecil, or spending even a little bit like Brian Peña, who got 7.5/2 and appeared in like 6 games for them. The Cardinals can't afford to make those mistakes that franchises like the Yankees and Dodgers can.
Yeah. Don't you think at some point, because the Cardinals did go through a long stretch where they were just hitting on everybody. Like, mm-hmm. It just happens.
Devil magic.
Yeah. I mean, don't you feel like, because I know you mentioned a couple of deals, and you're absolutely right as you look at them, hindsight being what it is. But at the time, everybody was in. It's like, oh yeah. That makes sense. That's the right guy. They need a guy. He's perfect. He's sought after. He's the one. Give him the extra year, because it takes it, whether it's him or whether it's Cecil or Fowler, whoever it was. But at some point, you knew something was going to turn a little bit. The hope is now it kind of turns back, where it's like, all right, now we're back on the right track. Oh. We're getting the right guys. We're spending the right money. I don't know. It's difficult.
And I look at the way the Dodgers and even the Yankees, they made the trade for Stanton, but they aren't going out. The Dodgers, under Andrew Friedman, have never signed a player to more than a $100 million contract. The Cardinals have signed more guys to $100 million contracts than the Dodgers have since Andrew Friedman arrived there 6 years ago. And the Yankees are drafting and developing now. Aside from the Stanton trade, you look at the lineup, and granted, they went out and gave Tanaka a bunch of money to come over from Japan, but they're another team that is drafting and developing. It's not about spending. Cardinals have the 6th highest payroll. It's about spending smartly.
Well, it is that. It's both. And I also want to add something here so that we get this clear. I mean, at least according to Forbes, the Cardinals are the 7th most valuable franchise in baseball. And in terms of revenue, that's where they are, too.
I might have been wrong on their revenue. What was it?
This is the report from this year from Forbes. They $356 million.
In revenue, okay.
Yeah, in terms of revenue, their operating income is 60. Where is it? $65 million. The Yankees brought in $668 million. Dodgers $549 million. Red Sox $516 million. Cubs $452 million. Giants $462 million. The Mets $340 million. Cardinals ahead of that at $356 million. So they're a valuable franchise. I mean, they're not where the Marlins are or where the Pirates are, mm-hmm. or teams like that. They do really well with money.
And having the 6th highest payroll is commensurate with their value and with their revenues.
Well, and that just goes back to the spending smart, right? You can't just throw money at problems. You can't just pay a player more to get up on payroll and expect to be better. That's not how it works. It's all about making your money work for you.
It's the Fast Lane on 101 ESPN. Coming up, one of Brad's favorite teammates from that 06 championship team is now the Cardinals assistant GM and scouting director, Randy Flores, next on 101 ESPN. With Cardinal World Series champ Brad Thompson and Chris Ronji, I'm Randy Carricker. It is the Fast Lane on 101 ESPN, and it is Flashback Week. We're celebrating the 2000s, and one of Brad's teammates on those 2006 World Series champions, Randy Flores, the Cardinals' current assistant GM and director of scouting, joins us on the Brown and Crouppen Celebrity Line. Randy, thanks for taking some time with us. How you doing?
I'm outstanding. Thanks for having me.
Hey, it's great to have you with us. I want to start with this. You were a veteran in 2006. You were 30 years old. You'd had about 5 years in baseball. How much fun did people like Brad Thompson and Josh Kinney and Johnson and Hancock down in that bullpen, how much enjoyment did they bring the veteran that year?
Well, the funny thing is I was a veteran in age, but I was very young as far as experience in the big leagues. And so all of us, independent of our age, were kind of on the same playing field. And I think that that was one of the things that really helped us kind of form a bond. When you have guys who, you know, different ages, but very similar in their experience in the major leagues, are all working for the same goal. And then you have veterans like Isringhausen and Looper kind of steering that ship.
I'll tell you what, that is a huge thing that I think oftentimes we talk about, but maybe not enough, is that group in 06 specifically. But Flo, I mean, the whole time that you were there and the whole time that I was there, the leadership among that group, and whatever, you know, whatever position it was, bullpens, the starting pitchers, the position players, there were so many great leaders in those groups, weren't there?
No, BT, and that's what I think of. It's like, you know what, when you talk about leadership, how do you measure it? How do you quantify it? How do you assess it? Well, when I think about it, I think of, well, how does someone act when things aren't going well? How does someone behave in the community? How does someone behave in the media? How does someone handle their business when everything isn't going great? And for that bullpen, that's what I think of Isringhausen. You know, he was dealing with a rough year. He was dealing with injury. It was a precursor to his hip surgery. And here he is at a moment in his career where he wishes he was on his game and he wasn't. Well, how did Izzy handle that? And that was an example of leadership, as someone who handled it like a pro. And his mentorship of Wainwright and the way he handled the media and the way he took the high road was really an example for all of us.
So, and you mentioned it just a moment ago, trying to quantify that, having a leader on your team or multiple leaders on your team. How do you do something like that when you know a guy may not, he's not going to produce a lot for you offensively. Maybe his skills aren't quite what they used to be, but you know he has that ability. How do you quantify it?
Look, I think in some ways it's a bit of a tiebreaker, right? A lot of us are similarly skilled or similarly talented players. And so when you're looking at a range of possibilities, whether it's options, salary, experience, production, if it's tied, sometimes someone who has a reputation of being a leader, or someone who has a reputation for being a strong clubhouse presence, someone who has a reputation for grinding in the manner of which a professional environment appreciates, I think it could serve as a tiebreaker.
Randy Flores, one of Brad's teammates on the 06 World Championship Cardinals, with us on 101 ESPN. Okay, you got to be honest with us here. When you were playing with Brad Thompson and you guys were playing bullpen games and in the clubhouse beforehand, did you see him becoming a broadcasting superstar?
What I saw Brad doing was pitching 30 years in the big leagues, being a Hall of Famer. I mean, he was that good as a player.
Thanks.
Where I'm just shocked that he's not a first ballot Hall of Fame entrant. Hmm. And so everything else is just a surprise because he did not live up to, you know, the talent that he had, which is shocking, Brad. I'm not sure how it didn't work out for you.
Flo, I mean, everybody picks a different path. We all know I could have hung on in the big leagues. I could still be pitching now. But, you know, I just decided to go this direction. We all have different paths in life.
You guys need to tell us what your favorite bullpen game was.
Oh, God, who knows? You know, Flo,
my favorite game for Brad was when he threw a strike and got an out.
I
like that game, too. Flo, we were doing a show just a couple of days ago, and a guy brought up a baseball, and he's like, hey, would you sign this? And me, in my typical joking fashion, like, oh, what, was it a home run I gave up? He's like, yeah, actually, it was. It was, and he gave me the date. I'm like, dude, that's my first big league home run ever. So I'm giving out souvenirs. That was my thing.
No doubt about it. But no, to get to your original question, no. Look, Brad, as you guys all appreciate, Brad had just a depth to him that us in the bullpen we were treated to. And when you provide him a platform, watch out. And he's taking that run with it. So no surprises there.
Well, it's easy to get a platform when you go 2 weeks without getting your name called on that phone down there. So it gives you a little time to work on material. Now
you definitely weren't stressed about getting
that's so
game.
True. It's like, man, this game is tight. Flo, go get him. Go get him. Flo, we talked plenty off the bat today about the 06 World Series, obviously, and the NLCS. And when you go through that, when an average fan is thinking about that game seven, certainly Adam Wainwright punching out Carlos Beltran, it's burned into your mind. Jeff Suppan being unbelievable. Soup was incredible in that one. The Yachty home run. But the winning pitcher of that game was you. And you came in, it was the bottom of the eighth, Soup had just walked Carlos Beltran. You come in to face a guy that Carlos Delgado me every single time. Carlos Delgado, David Wright, and Sean Green. Walk us through that. You coming into that ball game, game seven, Shea Stadium.
Look, I can only say, isn't that a beautiful thing about baseball, BT? That, like, here you have Pujols, here you have Roland, You have Eckstein, the MVP. You have Edmonds. You have Yachty. You have these greats of the game. And the way baseball is constructed, it's like guys and you and me at the time had a chance to have an impact on that game. And certainly, look, over 162 games, guys like me and you don't matter. But over one inning or one at-bat, it's an insanely fun component of baseball that the whole roster has to be used at all points in the season and then at some highly impactful and high-leverage situations in postseason. I just think that I was lucky to be in that spot. Now, as far as walking me through it, I was scared out of my mind. It's fun now to talk about it because the game's over. I already know what happened. I got out of it. But when you're in the middle of it, it's mind-boggling scary.
Got out of it, by the way, is pushing it a little bit. Since you struck out Carlos Delgado, you struck out David Wright, and you got Sean Green to ground out, that was far from getting out of it, Flo.
Well, BT, look, you guys can all look at my numbers. There's no more line in baseball because of the internet.com, right? There's no more line. And so you can look at my 2006 and just know, like, look, well, you were barely hanging on. And so for that season to end the way it did, and then for Tony La Russa to trust me the way he did, and then for me to actually execute and adhere to a plan and listen to Yachty and come through with that unscathed, there was no better feeling than seeing those pillars in the game, to see them smile and know that I didn't ruin it for them.
We talk about it a lot here, in particular when Albert Pujols came back. But what is your memory of the home run in Houston?
Oh, just a pin drop. You know what it is? You always wonder, as I was a kid, I wondered what it would be like to watch Superman just to shake his hand to fly, or to spin a real web out of my wrist like Batman. Not the fake one, but the real one. But when you're living in that moment, you're actually watching a real-life superhero. I think for his career here with St. Louis, it was the embodiment of a generational player. That's what superheroes look like. And you answer the bell the way he did. And so then you have in Houston, when you think that all is lost, the game is over, there is no chance, the only person who could say that is a superhero, and that's what Albert was.
Randy Flores with us on 101 ESPN. It's interesting, that was only 13 years ago, and we mentioned, Randy, during our first segment here today, that six of your eight starters in your starting eight, your primary starters, came from other organizations. Pretty much every starter among your rotation, except for Anthony Reyes, came from outside the organization. Baseball just isn't that way anymore. You are, as a scouting director, really important. It really has become a draft and develop sport and changed really quickly, hasn't it?
No, you know what? And the game goes through cycles on that. And so, look, that cycle, there's nothing I want to say that was better about that cycle or worse about that cycle. It's just different. And so one of the things that you mentioned is the weight of responsibility for the drafting, international scouting, waiver wire claims, everything that goes into finding players to help us win here in St. Louis is vitally important.
Flo, you brought up a name there a second ago, Anthony Reyes. And game one of the World Series, he gets the nod, and all he does is just goes eight strong and outduels Justin Verlander. I don't think too many people saw that one coming outside of the organization.
Isn't that fun? I mean, come on. We both know Reyes, BT, and you talk about someone who could do a job when they're going right, when they're healthy. When they have their delivery in sync and be dangerous, it's Reyes. And you talk about the stars aligning on the road. You get us coming from Shea Stadium, that little bunker mentality, that little platoon we had going into Detroit. And Reyes, I think, just really answered the bell in a way where when things were right in his arm and in his body, that's the Reyes we expected. And so we expected it, like you said, but it was a shock to everyone else.
Flo, do you ever nowadays, when you see a pitcher field a bunt, throw to third, and throw it up the line, do you ever not think about the Tigers? Because I don't. Every time.
No. Every time. 100%. There's moments my little son, who's not yet two, throws the ball up the line, and I'm like, oh, Tigers.
Yep. PFPs. Gotta get them.
That's just poor Tigers.
Well,
you know?
What are you going to do? You don't like him, play better.
Poor Kenny Rogers was out there, wasn't he?
He was there.
Yeah.
A little sticky situation. Yeah. Allegedly. Well,
what is that on his hand? We were also, Randy, talking a little bit about how things are more even amongst teams now when they're doing their scouting. And it's not just amateur scouting, but it's scouting other teams' talent when you're potentially going to make a deal and you're looking at their prospects. How even is the playing field with all the data that's available to all the teams around baseball?
Look, I don't know how if I want to answer how even it is or come across as some expert on what info is out there, what's tribal knowledge, what's unique to each org, what is in aggregate is similar across all levels. What I will say is, though, the wins are now in the margins, oftentimes, right? Oftentimes they're in the margins. And so we are pushing just as hard as everyone has 10 years ago, 15 years, 20 years ago. But with the proliferation of TrackMan, ball tracking, radar devices, assessments and physical strength, projections, et cetera, aging curves, the wins are now sought after oftentimes in the margins, and where you might devote a lot of your energy into a big, huge trade that will win headlines. Now, oftentimes that comes into what you do in player development, what you do in the draft, which round you take a guy, international, where's the best value to be had. And so those wins are something that we're all striving to, and they're just now being sought in a different place.
Flo, your job never ends. I know you're constantly traveling, always going somewhere, always working, but hopefully you get time every once in a while to reflect on stuff. I want to know from your standpoint and your current job, what was it like when your first player that you drafted made it to the big leagues? Was there there's got to be a sense of pride, a good feeling about that.
You know what it is, BT, and I've said this, is that, look, when you're a player, you're myopic. Your job is to block out everything in the world, everything, so that you could focus to throw a ball over the plate and not have it be hit for a home run, right? It sounds simple, but it takes, at least for me, and I would imagine for you, it took all of our energy to block that out, right? To just block everyone out, to be so self-centered, so myopic, so singularly focused that everything else is a blur. Well, in this position, in management, in the front office, or as a scouting director, you're acutely aware of all the energy that goes into those picks, all the man hours put into it, all the assessment, all the people who have poured their life into this game. And then you're acutely aware of the player you draft, what their story is, what their development arc is like, who has had an impact on their career. And then to get them between the lines, it really is something special. And I recognized that for the first time when I was my very first October after getting this position, was seeing the look in the eyes of John Mozeliak, of Mike Hirsch, of Moises Rodriguez, Gary LaRocque, as we're watching that postseason. I'm seeing in their face that they know the story of every player on that field. And so now, just beginning my career and beginning to see the fruits of our department's the labor, is to know the story and have a look in my eye that more reflects the looks of my bosses when I first joined.
Hey, Randy, before we let you go, as a fan, because the organization had so much success that decade, I think there became a level of expectation among us as fans. But, man, that was a really special place and time, 04, 05, 06. That was really incredible. I bet there are a lot of situations, like today, where you can see things that happened during those years in your mind's eye. It really was amazing.
No, it really was. I mean, I was a call up in 04 when Steve Kline popped his groin. Just a great team that lost to the Red Sox. 05 went over 100 games, I think it was, and fall short of the mark. And then us in 06, you know, I think now we're tethered to history, right, as one of the greats. But we won 83 games in 06. And so you just think of how much luck plays into it, how much getting hot at the right time plays into it, how hard it is to be consistent plays into it. And I think just to be in play, to allow yourself a shot on goal, to give yourself a chance for all things to line up is something that we're striving to. And certainly in that period, that we were just the beneficiaries of a great cycle in Cardinals history.
Finally, Flo, we talked about all these great things, these accomplishments, these unbelievable moments. Where would you rank presiding over my wife and I's wedding? Is that number one still?
Wait, we did that, Brad?
Yeah, you think? Is it real? Did that really happen? I haven't checked. I just assume we're married.
No, but look, here's the thing, and I don't want to be cheesy, BT, okay, but I'm going to do it.
I love it.
There's nothing like dogpiling a World Series. There's nothing like being a scouting director. There's nothing like contributing to the media voice here in St. Louis. But the game goes on independent of our participation in it. It just will go on. It went on before, so we'll go on after us. And to be linked to life events, like your wedding, to be linked into the life events of our teammates, I think that's something that stands the test of time, and that's why it's number one on the list.
No doubt about it. Flo, you are the best, man. We really appreciate you taking the time today.
Good stuff, man. Thank you.
Thanks, Randy. You, Randy Flores, the Cardinal Scouting Director on 101 ESPN. Did he get ordained online? Is that the way this worked out?
I don't know. It's a real deal. Like, his dad is a pastor, so I don't know exactly what the entire process was, but it was real deal. It was legit.
That's awesome.
He was nervous.
nervous for it. He nailed it, too. He was fantastic. And the one thing that he couldn't do in the process, he couldn't look up and make eye contact with Izzy because Izzy was trying to make him laugh. So
that's beautiful.
Yeah, he was fantastic. One of whenever I'm asked, who are your favorite teammates, those two guys always pop up because, you know, Flo is just an amazing human being. He's great at what he does now, and he's going to be successful in whatever it is he does forever.
And by the way, guys, if, well, not you two, it doesn't apply to you and Randy, BT, but if you happen to be listening and you're engaged to a nice person and you don't really want to be any longer, ask me to officiate it because I am 100% in being asked to officiate a wedding and then the relationship ending. So
just one for one or more?
Two for two.
Two for two?
Two for two.
All right. Oh, man.
I don't have the license. I was going to get
ordained?
I was going to get it.
Well, they broke up beforehand. You didn't even have to do it?
Yep.
Oh. Keep that in mind.
Yep. So let me know. Tweet me.
Next up in the fast lane, Jake Marisnyk has been suspended by Major League Baseball for his collision with Jonathan Lucroy. We've got the details on that and more from the Cardinals as they get ready for the second half of the season. It's all next in your Hot Topics on 101 ESPN. The Cardinals have an optional workout today before resuming their season tomorrow at the ballpark as they open a three-game series against the Arizona Diamondbacks. Can't wait for that. And the Cardinals will try to get above 500. They're at 44-44 as they start the second half of the season. And they'll pitch Adam Wainwright tomorrow night against Undecided.
Oh, man, that guy is tough. Yeah. Always a tough matchup is Undecided. I am, look, I'm excited for the second half. And I didn't think that I would be thinking that with a record of 44-44. But the standings being what they are, it's going to be exciting. It's only two games back. We know that the Cardinals have a lot of things that have to get better. And honestly, if they play the same way, even if the division does, this team can't win a World Series. I don't think. If they play the same way that they do it and the individuals just stay where they are, I don't think it's going to be good enough. But I do believe that there's a lot more talent there. I do believe that there's a couple of weeks until the trade deadline, and you can tinker a little bit if you want to, and it's going to be interesting down to the wire in the Central.
50-24 is what they need to do to get to 94 wins.
Ow!
What will be interesting to see is if any of the three teams we talk about a lot, and I believe, Randy, you're a little more concerned with the Reds than I am, or is it the Pirates?
No, I like the Reds.
Okay. I'm wondering if any of the three teams that we're most concerned about, at least in my opinion, if any of them start to pull away here in the next 2.5 months. I don't know if it's going to happen anytime soon, but if one of these teams does make a significant deal, I could see it happening.
And I had the stat the other day. We talk about the Cardinals going 50-24. Since Joe Maddon took over the Cubs, they basically play 667 ball after the All-Star break.
They're pretty good.
Yeah. They basically go 2-1 in every series that they play after the break. So they're impressive. And Joe Maddon, like Tony with you guys, set them up for the stretch run. He knows what he's doing, and that team is prepared to take off now.
Yeah, I am really interested, though, what's going on over there internally. Because externally, things aren't going great. Like, they're not playing up to it. Theo Epstein has talked quite a bit about it. You know that you've got Maddon on his final year of a contract, and even though, you know, he's going to say all the right things about it and how it doesn't matter and he's not worried about it, you'd have to think that there's something there. Ultimately, it doesn't really matter too much what's going on behind the scenes if the people that are out there actually do what they're supposed to do as well. Same conversation we had with the Cardinals, but I believe just on paper, they're the most talented ball club in the Central. The Cubs are. They should be pretty much top to bottom. You can give the advantage of the bullpen to a couple of other teams, but they're the team. If I'm worried about somebody taking a run, going on a run, it's the Cubs.
It's still for me too. And until some other team proves that they are, I think this is the team you have to pick. And by the way, the thing they're worried about right now is offense. But they've got the third best OPS in the league,
which
is crazy.
And Hamels has an oblique, and Hendricks has been dealing with shoulder injuries. So their concerns about starting pitching at the beginning of
the
season, the depth of that starting pitching are coming to fruition. Astros outfielder Jake Marisnyk suspended two games for his collision with Jonathan Lucroy on Sunday. That's about fair. I would say that's reasonable.
They had to do something. Yep. You couldn't just let him do that, whether you believed it was clean enough or not. I'm not sure which angle you saw, if it was super clean. But the rules are the rules, whether intent was there or not, you had to do something. Luke Roy ended up with a broken nose, ended up with a concussion, and you had to come down on him a little bit.
You know, the more I watched the replay, it didn't seem like he did much to avoid it. And I know there were some people saying, well, he took a step to the right because he thought the throw was coming inside. I don't know about that. I know it's happening in like a second.
It is hard.
But the catcher's inside the baseline the entire time. The entire time. And the whole outside of the plate is available to him. I don't know how that collision happened.
That's
that
way that he explained it, right? He said, I thought the play was just going to happen on the outside. I went in. What are you going to do?
Yeah.
But I've also heard somebody say, I wasn't trying to hit him. It slipped.
Right. I mean, he did seem sorry immediately.
No, he was. I think sometimes you're sorry for what happened more so than how it happened. You know?
Right.
Football news, Dolphins defensive tackle Kendrick Norton cited as at fault for the July 4th accident that led to him having his left arm amputated. He was cited with improper lane change due to him pulling in front of another vehicle and making slight contact with that vehicle before crashing into a concrete barrier. I was at the Helium Comedy Club last night Jesus. For a comedian competition.
How'd your set go?
I didn't do it. I was a judge.
Okay.
But one of the comedians said, you know, there is a law that you can't start pulling forward until I press send on my phone.
That's a thing.
I do like that one.
It is.
I don't think he's not going to be able to give the real proper signal anymore. Like out the window, you ever have your turn signals?
Oh, yeah, no. Not with his left arm.
That's going to be tough.
No.
Guys.
That's unfortunate. By the way, was that fun? I feel like I love stand-up comedy anyhow, and I feel like I think that would be a bucket list thing, is to do like an open mic set. Like that'd be really fun.
There were 12 comedians and they were all very funny. It was great.
Cool. Well, I think the hardest thing to do would be to come up with new material all the time.
Yeah.
That's tough, man. I applaud people who do that for a living.
You know, Dave Chappelle is like the guy. He'll roll out like a new hour special like it's nothing.
Mm-hmm. Which
yeah, how do you do that?
That's incredible. Yeah.
And Jim Brewer yesterday, buddies with they're close with Dave Chappelle. And Melvin Gordon has informed the Chargers that he will not report to training camp and will demand a trade if he doesn't get a new contract. And as somebody pointed out on Twitter, Melvin Gordon's about to find out what position he plays.
What do you mean you're not going to pay me? What do you mean nobody wants me?
That's awesome. I mean, but not.
He's crazy talented. Mm-hmm. He's awesome, but we've seen better. Do what he's doing.
Yeah.
So
miss
and
a whole
he ended
year.
Up getting paid. That guy got paid, but you don't miss out on that kind of money. Or you don't
right.
make it up.
No, you don't. It's the Fast Lane on 101 ESPN, and those are your hot topics of the day. We've got a new fighter coming your way next here in the 4 o'clock fight on 101 ESPN.